It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you in this day after Memorial Day, and I just want to start right away by echoing our news report at the top of the hour that we need to be praying for people in these tornado-affected areas. At least 5 million have been affected by the power outages across Ohio. In fact, Dayton said that they've got at least 88% of their people without power right now. And of course, that's something that we can cope with, as inconvenient as it is. But of course, I'm sure they're exploring whether there's been a loss of life. Some of the tornadoes have hit in Indiana. So we want to pray for our friends, our American friends who are struggling in those areas of the country right now. Well, yesterday, of course, was Memorial Day. And I just want to bring to your mind, this is the day after, of course. But, you know, when we think about the conflict in the Middle East, and we think of all we've been through. We think of the tanks rolling into Iraq. I remember watching that. We think of the towers falling during 9/11. And we think of all of our soldiers. Think of Tom Cotton, the senator, who left his position in school and ran to enlist. He's one of thousands who ran to enlist to defend their country, but many of them did not return. In fact, since March of 2003, almost exactly 7,000 members of our armed forces have been killed in conflicts in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And that doesn't even include the 8,000 American military contractors that have fallen. And of course, the contractors are often former military who have gotten out of the military and gone back to volunteer, and not volunteer, they get paid, but have signed up to be contractors to go back and work in the war effort. So we have a lot to be grateful for. That's just one conflict. Of course, there are many other conflicts. I think of the Rolling Thunder. If you don't know who they are, I love it when they come to D.C. They are mostly Vietnam veterans. They ride their bikes and they wear red, white, and blue. And they gather in the parking lot of the Pentagon, and then they really just take over the streets and the roadways in D.C. They came on Sunday and they make lots of noise, and I just love it. They are so impressive. I will never forget, right after 9/11, maybe a couple of years past that, I remember there being so much tension in D.C. and so much fear, you know, of attacks, further attacks. And I remember how my heart just leapt, shall we say, in my chest as I watched the Rolling Thunder and all those guys riding their motorcycles. And I just felt like it was a statement to the Islamists among us. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Don't mess with our men who served in uniform, who have a lot of courage, and they're not going to let you get away with this. But so they rolled through Washington on Sunday. It sounds as though that might have been their last time to do that because it's been so expensive. But the president has said he wants them to continue, so we'll see what happens with that. And speaking of the president, he's in Japan. He spoke to the troops in Japan just in the last 24 hours, and this is part of what he had to say.
A tough bunch of people, right?
There is President, I have no higher honor than serving as your commander-in-chief and the extraordinary men and women of the American Armed Forces. Together, these officers are leading the most fearsome group of American warriors this side of the Pacific. You defend our freedom, our families, and you defend our great American flag. You show the world the force of American might and American heart. And you prove across these perilous waters and far beyond that there is no match on earth for the awesome power and glory of the American Navy and the United States Marines. Thank you to the proud sailors and Marines of USS Wasp. God bless our military, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much.
I wanted you to hear that because that's your president. And what you're going to be hearing is all the things he said in Japan about Joe Biden, various things, because, and the reason he makes those statements, not that he should, he probably should just say, I'm not talking about that. I'm in Japan on state business. But he answers reporters' questions. They ask him questions and he answers. And his answers are the things that make the news, not really his prepared statements, not really the things that he really is trying to communicate. So that's part of what he communicated, actually communicated to the troops in Japan in the last few hours. Of course, attempts to destroy him continued. They follow him everywhere. As he was getting on a plane, one of the many planes that he was taking to go to Japan, this was the interaction, clip 5.
What do you hope to accomplish with your personal attacks on the speaker? You're saying lost.
Excuse me. This just shows how fake you and the news are. When you say a personal attack, did you hear what she said about me long before I went after her? Did you hear? She made horrible statements. She knows they're not true. She said terrible things. So I just responded in kind. Look, you think Nancy's the same as she was? She's not. Maybe we could all say that. But I think, frankly, right now we are, I'm only speaking for myself. I want to do what's good for the country. I think Nancy Pelosi is not helping this country. I think the Democrats are obstructionists. They're hurting our country very, very badly. We can pass so many different bills right now, but all they want to do is investigate because they failed with Robert Mueller and the Mueller report. They want to try and get a do-over of the Mueller report. It doesn't work that way. And just so you know, I was the most transparent, and am, transparent president in history. We gave 500 witnesses. I allowed attorneys to testify in front of Bob Mueller. 2,500 subpoenas. 1,400,000 pages of documents. We gave it. I didn't have to give any of it. We gave it. And then we get a great result, and they say, oh, this is terrible. Let's do it over again. You can't do it. Our country doesn't have that kind of time.
No, that's the president responding to a reporter. Of course, they just won't let it go. Well, why should they? They're losing. I think they're losing. I hope, because I just think this is injustice. And as a matter of fact, to bring you up to date with what's going on in the what should we call it? The witch hunt. I guess I could echo those words of the president because I think that's fair assessment. We've talked so much about Lieutenant General Flynn. The judge that's overseeing his case is Judge Emmett Sullivan. And now Emmett Sullivan has required that unredacted portions of the Mueller report that pertain to General Flynn be made public. Now, let me just say that Judge Emmett Sullivan is not friendly with General Flynn. He actually, I have to say, I don't know what the problem is, but Emmett Sullivan has said a lot of things that sort of demonstrate to me that he is really believing that General Flynn is some sort of a criminal and that it's a cover-up, because he said things publicly about that. Nevertheless, I think Judge Sullivan might be surprised when these unredacted portions, which include a transcript of General Flynn's calls with former Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, a voicemail that's been redacted, and a few other things. He's asked for that by Friday. So this will be interesting. I think this will be very interesting. I think General Flynn is supposed to be sentenced by Emmett Sullivan pretty soon. And so we are learning some incredible things. I have to say, I don't have time to go into it today in as much detail as I would like, but we are learning that the Obama administration were surveilling, using the NSA, all of the abilities of American intelligence to go after political enemies, opponents, as early as 2012. We know that the IRS scandal, the one where they pretty much in 2010 tried to destroy the Tea Party and almost, you could say, have managed to do that by harassing, was part of a larger project that we know that Comey was FBI director then. We know that John Brennan was the head of the CIA. All of them worked together. There was one dissenter, and that was Mike Rogers of the NSA, and they worked together to try to get Mike Rogers out because he was not working with them on this particular team. And we know now that Chris Wray, the current director of the FBI, along with Gina Haspel, who is the current director of the CIA, have been doing everything they can to stop the current Attorney General, Bill Barr, from getting the information that he needs from those agencies. I would say that Joe DiGenova went so far to say that he says that Chris Wray is now an enemy of the state. That's what he says, because he is blocking Bill Barr from getting the information he needs to fully investigate just what in the world was going on with the Obama administration. It's shocking, and we will discuss it, you can imagine. Liz Cheney was on ABC, I think it was, and this is what she had to say.
Pete Buttigieg is calling what he witnessed in Washington this week between President Trump and Nancy Pelosi a horror show. What's your reaction to this back and forth?
You know, what I see every day, I'm obviously in the House of Representatives, and what I see every day is a Speaker of the House who is increasingly losing her grip on the leadership of her conference. And I think you're seeing her being increasingly strident, you're seeing her lashing out, and you're looking at the Democrats who had put all their eggs in the basket of the Mueller report, hoping that it would provide them evidence they needed to move to impeachment. It didn't, but so now what they're doing is basically taking all of the oxygen out of the room, refusing to do any of the things we were elected to do, and instead continuing these attacks and partisan investigations, partisan issuance of subpoenas.
And the president attacks back. Is that the right thing to do?
Look, I think that, you know, what we have seen, if you
look at retweeting these videos, that
I think what is really crucially important to remember here is that you had Strzok and Page, who were in charge of launching this investigation, and they were saying things like, we must stop this president. We need an insurance policy against this president. That, in my view, when you have people that are in the highest echelons of the law enforcement of this nation saying things like that, that sounds an awful lot like a coup, and it could well be treason. And I think that we need to know more. We need to know what was Jim Comey's role in all of this. These people reported to him.
Yeah, so Liz Cheney channeling her dad, Dick Cheney, as articulate as her dad. She looks like her dad, but boy, she's right about that. And so the president picked up on that, and now the treason word has been sort of uttered. And I think, listen, I don't have a problem with that at all. The president has ordered that these bits of information, all of the information, just be released. Let's look at it. Let's find out just what happened. But as I said before, Gina Haspel and Chris Wray are fighting everything that they can to refuse and not cooperate with the president. So I don't think they publicly refused. We just know behind the scenes they're not cooperating. So that's what's happening, and we will be following that, you can imagine. Meanwhile, while we were having our holiday weekend on Friday, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration's plan to spend billions to construct a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border with Defense Department funds. It's U.S. District Court Judge Haywood Gilliam. And he halts the administration from using the reallocated funds for projects in specific areas in Texas and Arizona. And as I understand it, it's one of the most dangerous areas. It is the one that they felt they must stop right away. Now we're learning more about this federal judge. It might not surprise you to know that that federal judge who blocked Trump's border wall on Friday, by the way, it will be appealed, donated almost $30,000 to President Barack Obama and to other Democrats. So that's the judge that blocked the orders. I don't know how this keeps happening, but it does. Meanwhile, Kris Kobach, former Secretary of State in Kansas, a real champion on the enforcement of immigration, is leading an organization that's building the wall privately on grounds in the El Paso sector. They say they're apprehending 930 people per day. And Chris says they're working on it right away. He says the Army Corps of Engineers said previously that that strip of land was too rugged for fencing, but they're doing it anyway. And by the way, I hope to talk to Chris Kobach in person next week, so stay tuned for that. Well, that's the story, kind of a brief overview of what's happened while we've been off a few days. But when we return, a lot of things have been happening in Great Britain and Europe. The European Union elections happened over the weekend, and I want you to hear what happened. So we'll go there in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
Len Ingram and Jim Duncan, two Texans, support and believe in our ministry here at AFA and AFR.
We know more about the laundry business than anything else. We know a little bit about a lot of things, but we know a lot about the laundry and dry cleaning business.
They created a laundry detergent to sell to folks to support AFA.
We just want to be able to provide a product that can be used by AFA to support the ministry.
When you wash your family's clothes with Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent, you can take great satisfaction in knowing that you're supporting the vital work of the American Family Association. It's a unique way to increase your giving to AFA. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more about the Redeem Clean products when you visit redeemclean.afastore.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Pat Cipollone, White House General Counsel. His career includes serving as an assistant to Attorney General William Barr. Mr. Cipollone has served under President Trump since 2018. Proverbs 15:22 reminds us of the importance of wise counsel for our leaders. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for wisdom for Pat Cipollone as he advises the President on legal matters. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
When history books become propaganda, that story next.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu.
Beginning in the fall of 2019, many high school history classes will use a textbook that depicts President Trump as mentally ill and his supporters as racist. The textbook, published by Pearson Education, is titled By the People, A History of the United States. The final section of the book, titled The Angry Election of 2016, is especially critical of the president. The author goes on to describe the president's supporters as mostly older, often suburban, and overwhelmingly white. And it makes a not-so-subtle accusation that Trump supporters are afraid of minorities. In other words, students are going to be taught that President Trump is mentally insane and his supporters are a bunch of irredeemable deplorables. Such stereotypes would be laughable, but this leftist garbage is being shoved into the minds of impressionable American teenagers. And that's not right. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Clip 4.
This country is a union, not just a family of four nations, but a union of people. All of us, whatever our background, the color of our skin, or who we love, we stand together, and together we have a great future. Our politics may be under strain, but there is so much that is good about this country, so much to be proud of, so much to be optimistic about. I will shortly leave the job that it has been the honor of my life to hold. The second female Prime Minister, but certainly not the last. I do so with no ill will, but with enormous and enduring gratitude to have had the opportunity to serve the country I love.
Prime Minister Theresa May stepped down officially from her role as Prime Minister. She will be serving in some capacity, a little bit, while they try to stabilize things. But that was a big deal that happened, I think, last Friday. But that's not the only big deal that's happening in Britain and the European Union. Britain, of course, is, we've talked several times about Brexit, many, many times about Brexit. The vote happened in 2016. It carried by 4 points, 4 percentage points, to break away from the European Union. Theresa May did not lead very well, actually, on that issue. Her heart wasn't in it, so she came up with some deal that was really unacceptable to both sides, and they just couldn't pull it off. And so tensions are still at fevered pitch, I think, in Great Britain over this. Meanwhile, the European Union, which Britain is currently part of, which is, of course, the whole object of Brexit, was to break away from the European Union, held their elections over the weekend. So it's for us here in America, this is confusing. And I couldn't think of anyone better to explain it to us than Katie Hopkins. Katie's one of my favorite Brits. She's an English media personality. She has her own talk radio show, but she also has done a great amount. She had her own television show called Katie Hopkins Rule the World. She's written for The Sun, The Daily Mail, and we could go on and on, Katie, but then we wouldn't have a chance to talk. So thank you for joining me for us this morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well indeed. Thank you very much. And that was a fair and accurate summary of where we're at here in the UK. Our Prime Minister stepped down, very emotional for her outside 10 Downing Street. And I think, you know, you'd have to be missing a heart if you didn't feel for her slightly when she was in tears there saying goodbye. And then we launched straight into the European elections that we shouldn't have been a part of because we voted to leave 3 years ago. But nonetheless, we had to go through the European elections, and you're right on that as well, that the Brexit Party, a newly formed party led by Nigel Farage, came out on top once more, taking 31% of the vote and 29 of the available 63 seats. So another win for Brexit after not getting the Brexit that we voted for the first time.
It's really stunning. Okay, so now there's a lot of parts to this, Katie, and it's confusing for us because, you know, we have like two parties, basically, and you guys have like
so many.
Confusing. So we're talking about British elections. We're also talking about European Union elections and all the countries and the 300 million people, whatever it is, that vote in the European Union elections. So let's talk about Britain for a second. Nigel Farage, by the way, Katie, Well, let's see. I met you at the same meeting that I met Nigel Farage. He's been with us in D.C., and he has been people will recognize him if they see his face here in America. He's been on American television a lot. He was a leader of the Brexit movement, leading. What's UK? UKIP? What do you call that? You call it
that's
UKIP,
right.
Or does it?
That's right. Exactly
okay.
Right.
Okay.
The United Kingdom Independent Party. He was the leader of that. He stepped away for a few years, but he's just come back on the scene. In 6 weeks, he created this Brexit party, which then fought in these ridiculous European elections that we've just had.
So when we're talking about elections, we're not speaking of Britain yet. Well, actually, we should come back to that in a second, because you guys have to wrestle with Brexit again upcoming. Well, actually, let's stop and do that so we can just kind of keep a flow of thought here.
I think probably speaking as an outsider to America, but seeing your point, which is what the heck is going on? What the heck is going on, top line, is United Kingdom does not currently have a prime minister. We don't have a leader. We don't effectively have a President Trump. We have no one. We just entered some elections that we shouldn't have been part of, called the European elections, which people went out and voted Brexit again. And across Europe, so all of our good friends of America in Italy, in France, in Austria, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, a lot of those countries voted overwhelmingly in favor of the populists. So the exciting news away from the craziness of Britain is that the populists are on the march. There was a real, real strong performance by Salvini. Le Pen beat Macron. So in terms of pro-Trump, pro-America, pro-put-your-own-country-first, you guys have led the way in that, and we are now following, thank the Lord. So that is the positive to take away from this call, this chat that we're having, is the populists are on the march in Europe.
You know, it's interesting, Katie, because, of course, I read a lot of things I love, you know, I think I've told you my son is in Scotland, but even if he weren't there, he lives there. This is fascinating to me. You guys are really, you truly are our cousins. And so I watch this as closely as I can. So the impression I get from Nigel Farage and from you talking is that that was really a great showing at the European Union. But this is what I read in CNBC. Okay, so it quotes Holger Schmeiding, an economist at Berenberg, said there has been no dramatic upset. Defying the doomsayers once again, Europe continues to muddle through reasonably well. Judging by exit polls and first projections, the EU election will result in a more fragmented parliament with a slightly increased presence of Eurosceptic right-wing parties. But he says the deeply divided right-wingers will remain far away from wielding any significant power at the European level. They will not be able to block significant decisions. I'd like your response to that.
Well, first off, I don't know where he's been, but he certainly hasn't been anywhere near the election results. Second off, these parties that represent people like me, people that want to put our own countries first, they're called the EFDD or the ENF, Europe of Nations and Freedoms. They have doubled the number of seats they're going to have in the parliament. Salvini came first. His party was first in Italy. He is going to have a major voice in Europe. And what we're finding is that there's this huge block now of France, of Italy, of many others, Austria included, that are going to be standing up and saying, no, we want to put our own country first. So that guy, I think, is rather downplaying it. We've had a very similar thing here. So Brexit Party won, the people campaigning just for Leave won, and yet our state broadcaster, our lefty media like CNN, have come out and said, actually, this was a win for Remain. Because if you add up all of the votes for all the other parties that weren't Brexit, actually they won. So that would be like winning up all the scores of every baseball team that didn't win the league and saying, well, they won in actual fact. So there's a craziness about how they're trying to spin this. And you know what? I actually think it's because they're scared. And we've just seen a massive result. I know this isn't Europe, but in India, Narendra Modi, he won the election. The leftists were predicting that they would do well there. They failed. And in Australia, they've just had an election. The leftists were predicted to win, just in the same way that Hillary's polls were guaranteed a win. Same in Australia. And again, the right-wing government is back in power. Climate skeptics put Australia first. You know, they can spin this narrative all they want. The truth is that the results on the doors show populists are doing really well, and we're pushing back hard now against this global narrative we were supposed to have bought into.
Yeah, well, it must be, well, Katie, for you personally, it must be very encouraging because you've really taken a beating off of your strong stand, and every week you have, you've taken such a beating. So I'm happy for you, and I'm happy for all of us, but of course it's a fight, and we're not finished. I want to talk. Let's stay with Britain for a second, because now you have no prime minister, and so there's all this, like, what's going to happen? And will there be, there has to be another election to, no, my understanding is the Labour Party or Conservative Party wants to come up with someone that will then just be ushered into power. How is that going to work? Who do you think is going to prevail to be the new PM?
So trying to explain this very simply, you know, we are at the point, really, it's a bit like being a mum of a family of four children and two children on each side hate each other. Like, it's being a mum in a family that's impossible to control. So Britain is kind of an ungovernable country right now because this split down the middle, Leave or Remain, is pretty much 50-50. I mean, Leave have won twice, but it's still very finely balanced. So in amongst the population, a massive, massive split. And then you have a parliament that are anti-Leave. They want to remain. But the public, the people, are full of people like me who want to leave. So we are in this big muddle, and whoever stands up and says they want to be the next prime minister, what we actually want to know is, are you pro-Leave or pro-Remain? And let's just say they stand up like Boris Johnson, I will get us out of the EU, and we all say, yippee, let's vote Boris. The Houses of Parliament, the people in power, the establishment, the swamp want us to remain. So we are in an impossible crossroads. I have no idea who is going to be able to prevail. I imagine what will happen is we will see a new prime minister put forward, and then there will be a general election in the UK, which will be solely about whether we stay in or out of the EU. There will effectively be, at that point, a third referendum on Brexit. There will be a general election, and I imagine the Labour Party will say, let's stay in. The Tory Party will say, let's leave. And so the general election here in the UK will actually be the ultimate decider of whether we stay or leave the EU. And that will be some 4 or 5 years after we first voted to leave.
Wow. Now, Boris
Johnson. And in amongst all that, the rest of us are trying to get up, have our breakfast, have a shower, have a normal day. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know, Katie, because you pay so such close attention, you know that actually mirrors what's happening here. It seems like it's mirroring what's happening on the globe. People are just becoming so divided. It's really, the tensions are rising everywhere over some of the same issues, the basic issues. You know, when I heard Theresa May, I didn't pull this particular clip, but she was talking about all the things she had done, and she talked about defending people on the basis of a sex. We shouldn't be punished for who we love. That was part of the phrase. And the thing that struck me is, like, did she take her script from here? They're all saying the same thing. It's just amazing. Is there no gap between the countries now? I mean, we have really lost our individual personalities. We're fighting the same battle, it seems to me, internationally.
Yes, we are fighting the same battle internationally. And that's why there is an excitement for me, you know, looking across. There's 900 million voters in India. And I know people might think, Americans might think, well, India, long way away, not really relevant. Actually, the fight in India is just the same as our fight. They have Pakistan next door. It's a majority Muslim country. And yet, the Muslims inside of India still want to assert authority and control. And India is standing up against that and saying, no, we will put the Hindu people, secular people first. And these are the battles that are being fought. Same in Australia. You know, I mean, you've seen what's happened to New Zealand after the Christchurch terrible massacre, but they've just removed Jesus from their parliamentary prayer book in Parliament so as to be more accommodating. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing the fall of these countries, and yet we're seeing this fight back. And so I think this is an exciting time. I think many of us can feel that this fight is really taking some force now. And I feel like we are all on this web. We're all joined together. And as much as the globalists try and pump this narrative that we come second and these migrants come first or other cultures come first, we're saying no. And I feel that now. I feel that there's this strength of force in Australia, in India, in America, the populists, Salvini, Le Pen, you know, saying no. We like our countries first. And I think that's really exciting. You know, it is exciting. And you're right. I do feel sometimes like I've been in a boxing match. I'm on the ropes and they're still beating me. But I somehow feel like, right, come on then, another round, because we're going to bring this fight. And I really believe Trump's going to take 2020. And I think that's going to be a real pivotal moment for all of us, because we do look to America. We need those 64 million Americans and their neighbors to get out and vote. So it's key that we keep America, because we are coming on behind you. You are pulling us behind you as populists in Western Europe.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you, Katie. And, you know, speaking of India, let me just interject that India, of course, is, we don't hear much about it in the news, at least not in Western press. But they have, their economy is like an incredible story. They are, of course, some of the tech leaders, and their economy is booming. They are a force to be reckoned with, and they are strong allies of the West and, of course, of Britain, too. And so, yes, they are very important, and even though we'll never hear that in the West, I appreciate you telling us what just happened there. Now, I want to ask you about Boris Johnson, because my understanding is that Boris said he was for Brexit, but he voted for this horrible deal, which makes people not quite trust him. That's what I'm reading, except, Katie, there's the music. So let me ask you to respond to that on the other side. And then others are speculating that maybe Nigel Farage might actually be a potential new prime minister. So I'd love you to respond to that, too.
Sure.
My guest is Katie Hopkins from Great Britain. This afternoon for her, this morning for us. And we have not even really touched on what happened in the EU elections. I know Katie mentioned it briefly, but we're going to go back and flesh that out a little bit more. It's really an interesting thing that's happening around the globe. And we are now interconnected, whether we like it or not. And I also want to address the whole thing about why it's important that we love our own countries. It actually works to our mutual benefit, and we'll talk about that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The number of babies born in America dropped to a 32-year low in 2018, according to the CDC. To replace a generation, 2,100 births per 1,000 women are needed. In 2018, that rate reached just 1,728 births per 1,000 women. The rate has generally been below replacement since 1971 and consistently below replacement for the last decade. The genesis of the consistent failure to reach population replacement levels with baby births can be traced to the early 1970s. Roe v. Wade was decided January 22, 1973. You do the math.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
There's a lot happening around us. That's why Christians need to stand strong on family values and morality. Hi, I'm Ray Rooney, editor of The Stand, a blog from the American Family Association. The Stand has timely, carefully written articles on relevant cultural issues that you can quickly forward to others. The Stand is a beacon of light to a society in need of direction. Visit afa.net/the stand.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Father's Day is coming up, and we want to encourage you to give the Boy to Man book as a gift to the father of a 12-year-old son you know. The father might be your husband, your cousin, your nephew, your grandson, a member of your fellowship group, a neighbor, or your son's Little League coach. I had the privilege of being a guest on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk radio program, appearing with guest host Dr. Tim Clinton. Here's how a portion of that interview went.
Our special guest again today has been Brian Fisher. He's the author of a brand new work called The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. It's a must for every family out there.
If you order a book by June 7, we'll make sure to get you a signed copy by Father's Day. Go to afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It was shocking to hear on the eve of the Memorial Day weekend that John Walker Lind had been released from federal prison. This news brought to the fore forgotten recollections of the capture of this American Taliban in Afghanistan at the start of the so-called War on Terror, and his subsequent prosecution for murderously collaborating with the enemy. Lind remains an unrepentant Sharia supremacist jihadist. While he is subject to certain probationary restrictions, the New York Times reports that his parents, lawyers, and prosecutors aren't revealing where he will live. Within hours, the Louisiana House of Representatives voted to create a state terrorist registry like the ones enabling law enforcement to learn where freed sexual predators reside. More, once jailed jihadists may be coming to a neighborhood near you. Make sure that those responsible for protecting us know where they will be living. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm very happy to help any conservative leader who is genuine about us leaving on the 31st of October. And to that end, I volunteer now. Brexit Party MEPs, some of whom have run big businesses, are used to negotiations, have done deals for a living. We would like right now to be part of the negotiating team. We're going to be there in Brussels anyway. Use us, give us some responsibility, and let's make sure this country is absolutely prepared to leave with a clean break Brexit at the end of October. As far as Boris and others are concerned, well, my difficulty is, whether we talk about Boris Johnson or Michael Gove or Dominic Raab, all of them, in the end, voted for Mrs. May's new European treaty, which would have been Brexit in name only. And the difficulty the Conservatives have got is this isn't just about changing leader. It's about re-establishing trust. You can't tell the British people 108 times that we're leaving on March the 29th, as Mrs. May did, and then not deliver. If the next leader says the same thing, who's going to believe them?
That's the voice of Nigel Farage. That we discussed him earlier. He's been the leader of the Brexit movement. And he sort of stepped aside for a time. And then he came back with full force, establishing the Brexit Party 6 weeks ago. And they ended up with 31.7% of the votes in the European Union election. It was just pretty amazing. A huge victory. Katie Hopkins from Great Britain, a media personality and writer and par excellence commentator, has joined us this morning. So, Katie, you're without a prime minister. Oh, now, we're talking about two different things. Nigel, of course, is talking about the European Union elections, and that's what's confusing to us. Is the Brexit Party then only a party in regard to the EU elections, or is it a party that will have a function and a name and a logo in the British elections?
And that's a perfect question. It was a party established 6 weeks ago for the purpose of fighting the European elections, where we put candidates into the EU Parliament. However, Nigel has said, thanks to the success of the party and the momentum that it has and the lack of any clear leadership in the UK, the Brexit Party will contest local election, general election here in the UK. If we go to a general election here in the UK, the Brexit Party will contest those seats in the UK and is already interviewing candidates to be local candidates for those seats. So, yes, to your question, the Brexit Party will be a British party that will contest the general election.
All right. So your personal opinion, I really would like to know your personal opinion about Boris Johnson becoming prime minister. Tell me if I'm wrong, that he has probably the best chance of right now of being MP?
Yes. So Boris Johnson has the best chance of being our next prime minister. He is a bookies favourite. So if you're a betting person, you're betting on Boris. Bear in mind the Conservatives in this election, we just had this European election. The Conservatives had their worst performance since 1832. So in terms of where the party's currently at, it's at historic lows in terms of trust and respect and any kind of pulling power. So the Conservative Party desperately needs a star candidate to resurrect it. You know, it's going to be like kind of an Icarus moment, a kind of rebirthing of this party, and it needs someone like Boris. So I appreciate Farage's criticism, which is that Boris in Parliament supported Theresa May's truly dreadful deal. But I also think Boris is a sophisticated political operator, and I'm sure that sometimes you have to do certain things to try and retain your seat whilst you're campaigning for whatever. So no excuses for Boris, but in terms of, you know, as an ordinary Brit like myself, is Boris the man that I'd like to see us with our next Prime Minister? Yes, I would. Is it time for a massive personality with a terrible haircut to take power? Yes, it is, because frankly, Theresa May has been very grey, very boring, very weak, and very appeasing of everything from our Islamist massive to the European Union. And I think Boris is the man who will stride in there and be much more the sort of Brit we need. And also, wouldn't it be a joy to see Boris Johnson and Trump together? I think that's something I can revel in and be excited about. And also, he's just brilliantly clever. So the stuff he comes out with is just, you know, it's so great to watch. I think he makes politics interesting. And that sounds very fickle and surface level, but I think it really matters. So I think Boris Johnson is going to be the man for the job. I'm very hopeful it will be him. And I'm very fearful that the alternative would be an establishment stooge that isn't going to deliver leave. It will be someone who's going to sort of make a nasty little compromise decision and call it leave, but actually be remain. You know, someone that the establishment wants, and the establishment don't want Boris, and that's good enough for me.
Well, Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party wants another election for Brexit, another referendum. And
yeah,
so
referendum.
What would he have to do? What would he have to do to make that happen? I mean,
I don't know. I tell you, it's laughable because, you know, we had one referendum and then leave one. And now we just have the European election where Brexit won again. So, you know, twice now we've come out and we've got the majority for leaving. And now he wants another one. Like, how many times, really, do the British people have to go into a ballot box and put a cross against something to say, yes, we want to leave? Jeremy Corbyn does want a second referendum. He finally worked that out. And frankly, he didn't even win in his own area for the European elections. Like, the area that he represents is a place called Islington. It's a bit like Austin. You know, it's vegan central, it's immigrant central. It's if you do anything, you need a translator to translate whatever language these people are speaking. That's his area, and he didn't even win in that area. So you can take Labour and Jeremy Corbyn with a pinch of salt as well in the UK right now, because Labour supporters deserted him in droves. Wow. In the last election, because a lot of Labour people voted for Brexit as well, and no one delivered it for us.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, let me just say that October 31st is now the next drop-dead date when Britain is supposed to end. So, but Katie, one last thing on Brexit.
Of course.
The people that are concerned about it say that they think that if Britain leaves Brexit without some sort of a good deal, a clean Brexit, I guess the word is, that they will be economically, it will cause economic hardship, and there will not be, you know, the same, you won't have all the resources of the European Union. That's the fear. How would you respond to that?
You know, it always reminds me of when you go into a large corporate and you try and work for a large corporate, and they spend so much time making a decision that by the time somebody at the senior level has approved something, the moment has passed. And I feel that way about Brexit. It feels like the country is sitting on its fingers. It doesn't know what it's doing. We've spent 3.5 years waiting to see what we might do. And meanwhile, you know, if someone had just decided, right, we're leaving, we're out, we've left, we would have had 3 years to suss out if it was a good thing or not. Instead, we've spent 3 years without a decision. And many of my friends are small business owners, you know, like good people in America, employing 3 or 4 people. You know, they're trying to work stuff out with currencies. They're trying to work out who's going to, you know, be looking after their orders. Can they put this order in? Can they commit to supplying that? And they're just in a perpetual state of sort of suspended animation. Yeah. So I think what we're all after, my small business friends and myself, people on the ground, people on the pavement level, we just want a decision. And we are pretty determined that decision should be to leave. Because at the end of the day, if it goes disastrously wrong, of course someone can campaign to return to the EU and it can all be forgotten. But I think if we had just had some decisiveness, you know, the sorts of things we need in life, we need people making decisions, good or bad decisions, make the decision and own the outcomes. You know, simple principles that we learned in the military a very long time ago. And that's why I think this is the sort of leadership we need. It's very frustrating to me to watch all these people in grey suits fail to make decisions because they don't want to own the responsibility of the actions that come out of them. You know, we need some more conviction politicians back in power. Now, and that's what you guys have with Trump, and it's a real joy to watch.
It's refreshing. It is refreshing,
Isn't it?
Yeah, and Katie, let me add that for two people listening that you actually graduated from Sandhurst Military Academy.
Yes.
So when you talk about the military, you know a lot about that. I want to ask you
the frustration of knowing we'd get the job done. You know, if you put a military unit in, we'd get this job done in about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Let me ask you just a philosophical question, because you mentioned this and I teased about it before the break. This whole notion of us looking after the interests of our own countries, of course, the left wants to spin that as that's horrible. We're all in this together. We're like one grand population, and we are the one. I don't know. But so the reason why, from my perspective, it's like family. It's like the kind of the order of things. We should take care of our own children. We should take care of our own families. That doesn't mean that we're going to hurt someone else's. It's just that we take responsibility. We look out for the best interests. And that's the building block of society. And then the families become countries. So we look out for our own country and its best interests. We negotiate, but it's in the best interest of the world if we are taking care of our own. I'd love your thoughts about that, Katie.
I think it's so true. And by the way, I was going to say to you, I love the fact that your show has Pause for Prayer in it, because I just sat down before we spoke together and I listened to Pause for Prayer, and it was actually really lovely. And I think actually taking that little moment out to pause is a really delightful thing. So I just wanted to say that. But you're so right about putting our country first. If we look after our own, we are in a far better place to be able to help others. And I think many of us can relate to this. You know, I'm a mom. I've got three kids. They're 15, 14, and 10. And I think this is a family unit, myself and my husband. My mom and dad are actually here in my home at the moment helping me with something. If we put ourselves first as a little family team, and I make sure that I'm doing all the things I possibly can to try and help my children and help my mom and dad, and they help me, we're in a much better place then. When a friend needs something, we all pile in and help them. And I think that's exactly the model. If we look after our family first, our country first, we are a much better place to be, the Good Samaritan, when we're called upon. I think the Good Samaritan would have been not much use to anyone if he had been a poor man who'd opened up his house to everybody and had nothing left to give. You know, we need to put our family first, and I think so many of the troubles that we see, certainly in our inner cities here where knife crime is going off the charts, is because those children come from homes where they didn't have a father, they haven't got that family unit, and so we have to pick up the pieces. So let's get back to putting our family at the heart of everything. Let's do our best for our children, our parents, and I think from there, great things would happen, will happen, and are happening.
Yes, I do too, Katie, and of course, you know, America has we're still pretty impassioned about faith in God. Europe is losing that, and as some argue, has already lost that. And that's certainly the passion that drives Americans, because we have not forgotten, not everyone. A lot of people here have forgotten, trust me. But, you know, there's a huge core of us who are understand the order of things, that there is a God who has created people, and there is a responsibility and a way of living that he's carved out that's a good one. And it's the Creator has laid out a plan that really works. It's like if you make some sort of a little toy and you put the directions in it, if you made the toy, probably should follow those directions. So, but I want to talk to you a couple of things. This is almost impossible, I'll tell you before I ask you. But I was really surprised when I saw that Angela Merkel, I don't know, I think she's lost her mind, by the way, that she didn't do well in the EU elections either, but it was because of the Green Party. Just could you say a word about that?
Yes. I was in Germany very recently for their elections, which were really the precursor to what's happening now. Merkel lost power back in the German elections. She's really lost power in these European elections. And the Green Party have performed spectacularly. But what's happened is, if I'm a voter, and I used to vote for Merkel. I voted for Merkel all my life. My parents used to vote for Merkel. We all used to vote for the CSU. What's happened now is they can't bring themselves to vote for the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, the right-wing party, who are fantastic. I love them. They're the populists. They're doing great. So what they do is they say, well, I can't bring myself to vote for the AfD, the right. I will vote Green, because it's sort of like a harmless alternative. It's like I'm doing no harm. And so that's why you've seen this surge in Green support. Yeah, it's not really based on some sort of, you know, passionate conviction about the polar bear. It's that, oh, I don't want to be seen by my friends as voting for the right, especially not something labeled the far right, even though they're not. So what I'll do is I'll vote Green, because then I'll still be liked by my, you know, important neighbours and the people that I need to speak to at dinner parties. That's what the Green vote is all about. But actually, the AfD has done brilliantly well. They're really, really good people, and I love them a lot. And so the populists, your commentators from CNN and other tried to disguise those big wins for the AfD as well. But they were celebrating well into the night on the European election.
Oh, that's great.
They did great.
I'm glad I asked you, because that's been a mystery to me. Katie, we're out of time. We have to talk again soon. Thank you so much for taking time today and giving us your insights. And thank you for your courage. For your personal
pleasure.
Courage. Yeah.
I wish your listeners a good day.
Okay, thanks, Katie. Thanks, same to you.
Thank
All right,
you.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.